B-Pod Studios.
Gasper and Murray have scorching hot takes, twisting your mind with Pat Celtics and Bates. They'll also talk socks and out-of-town things. Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Just call them up on this Saturday. Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper
and Murray.
Gasper.
All right, welcome in Gasper and Murray. No Murray today. Tim McCone in for Big Jim. And we are live at Patriots training camp. Chris, I'll tell you what. I've filled in for Jim over the last few weeks, it feels like.
Yeah.
I do my best to do it. I can feel the disappointment coming from your trip. This is your annual trip with Jim. I know you guys nerd out on it. I can feel the disappointment in the seat next to me that you're not next to your normal partner here. I'm like the cheap rebound that you're trying to get over the breakup
no,
with. It's
I mean,
tough.
You know,
it's tough.
I'll tell you why I'm disappointed. It has nothing to do with your presence here, McCone. And I don't really nerd out on training camp. I like training camp, you know, being a football writer. But I come down here regardless of this show. But it's sort of, you know, one of Jim's few chances down here. And I like the way he stalks around.
Oh, he does, yeah.
Oh, he's like a fan. He's like totally if he's like, did you see that play? Oh, this guy looks really good. Oh, he's faster than I thought in person. It's like he goes into total fanboy mode. And that's what I love. I love watching Jim go into total fanboy mode and struggle to do our radio show because he's basically fanboying out on the Patriots being down here at training camp. That's what I miss.
No, it's true. It's one of my favorite shows to listen to you guys every year because you're right. He totally nerds out and goes all in on some of the undrafted guys that might pop that day and stuff. I love it. So
he's whipping out the Patriots credit card he has.
Yeah.
You know, just he goes total fanboy.
Head to toe in the pro shop, the whole thing.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Exactly.
I know he's struggling at a bachelor party right now in Philly.
In
so
Philly,
thoughts and prayers to Big Jim.
I hope he survives. Today. Bachelor party in Philly, that sounds dangerous.
I know. Seriously. Seriously. All right. Well, we are live from Patriots training camp. Chris, and the story, obviously, is year two of Mac Jones here. What have been your big takeaways so far as you've watched the second-year quarterback over the last few days?
Yeah, I mean, he looks really good. He's confident. He's accurate. He's in command. And I think that's what they want. You know, they want this to be Mac Jones' camp. They want the team to feel really good about Mac Jones. They want the fan base to feel really good about Mac Jones. They want the organization to feel really good about Mac Jones. And they want Mac Jones to feel really good about Mac Jones. Because I think that they look at this and say, his growth, Tim, his ability to make a Joe Burrow-like leap is their best chance to close the gap with the Buffalo Bills in the AFC East. And the Patriots have been down this road before. This is blasphemy in my mind, but I don't think in Bill Belichick's mind, in terms of, well, you have a very good quarterback, and he covers up some of the holes, and he amplifies what you have, and away you go. And I really think in their minds, they feel like they just sort of swap in Mac Jones and swap out Tom Brady and go back to the formula, and they should be a competitive team in terms of trying to get out of the AFC and get to the Super Bowl.
Well, when you look at kind of what's gone on here over the last few days, and obviously they're not in pads, right? So you can't go all in on this, but when you look at the talent kind of across the board offensively and defensively, what have you made so far of what the Patriots are kind of bringing to the table here?
Well, it's a little difficult to evaluate. You know, I know a lot of people were very high on the tight ends yesterday, and I think you should be high on Hunter Henry. Obviously, he had a fantastic first season with the Patriots, 50 catches, 603 yards, 9 touchdowns, which tied for the NFL lead among tight ends. But we all know that by any objective measure, Jonnu Smith really struggled.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end, he was a gadget guy and just a blocker. And so it's really encouraging to see him doing better. But on the other hand, I look at it and I say, okay, how much stock can I put in him beating Kyle Duggar, who had a very solid grade in Pro Football Focus as a coverage guy at about 75. But then I also look at like every key third down last year when a team had any sort of competent tight end, like that guy beat Kyle Duggar. So it's hard for me to gauge. I have some questions about this secondary, so it's hard for me to gauge just how good the offense is and how good these weapons are.
Yeah, I think that's going to – honestly, that's the biggest takeaway for me over the next few days, right? It's number one, how does Mac Jones look? And number two, offensively, not only the play calling, because I think that's something we're going to get into a little bit here moving forward too, but it's, you know, some of the adjustments by these guys heading into year two, because make no mistake about it. I mean, Chris, I couldn't believe this. I was looking it up last night when we were on with McCarthy. When you look at the salary cap for the Patriots, and obviously when you dip into free agency like they did last year, you're going to pay a premium for those positions. But the amount of money tied up into Nelson Aguilar – Hunter Henry and Jonnu Smith, I mean, you're paying those guys like elite weapons in the NFL, and so you're going to need some production out of Aguilar and Jonnu Smith here if this offense is going to take that next step, because again, they're getting paid like top flight weapons in the league.
Yeah, and that was sort of the bargain the Patriots, you know, knew that they were getting into when they brought those guys in, McCone, because when you looked at it, you know, they knew that in order to go from where they were, and they really desperately needed an infusion of talent at those pass-catching positions, they had to pay top-of-the-market rate to get those guys to come here. And they knew that at the time, and you hope you hit on a couple of those guys, and certainly they hit on Hunter Henry. You know, Aguilar last year I thought was okay. I mean, he wasn't great. I'd say for the salary, he probably didn't live up to it, and they'd like to get more out of him, but again, I think what Belichick is selling here is really internal growth, internal improvement, because that's what they need, number one,
right,
based on the expenditure they had the prior offseason. But number two, it's really all they can sell, because as you pointed out, with the salary cap situation they were in, they really couldn't be big players in free agency. I mean, I would say their biggest offseason move was the trade for Devontae Parker, which I love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't really understand why the Dolphins – I know the Dolphins felt like they could divest themselves of receivers after bringing in Tyreek Hill and Cedric Wilson, but that doesn't mean you have to give a guy away to your division rival. I think the Patriots fleeced the Dolphins in that deal. I love that move. But outside of that, like, there's not a lot of really sexy additions here, so – what are you going to sell? You can't sell sexy additions. You have to be able to sell internal growth and internal advancement, internal improvement.
617-779-0985 is the telephone number here, and I'm with you. I think really the storyline of this camp is going to be the growth of Mac Jones. I think the question, too, is have they put this player in the best position possible to be successful heading into year two? Obviously, McDaniel's out the door here, and when you look at the coaching staff, it's pretty apparent that Matt Patricia is going to have his hands on this offense. What's your confidence level in what's going on here? It feels like Patricia obviously has the walkie-talkie and that he's calling the plays here for the Patriots early on in camp.
Well, I look at it two ways. You know, I'll be honest, I have a lot of confidence in Matt Patricia as an offensive line coach. I think the offensive line will be good. I think he'll be good there. I don't think they'll miss much from Carmen Brasillo. That's not a knock on him. It's just, you know, the reality. I think Patricia can coach that position. He played it in college. He's coached it in college. He was an assistant with Scarnecchia. The play calling, I'm a little more nervous about, to be honest, because I just don't know. You know, that's something that people think they can do, and it's a little different, just the rhythm of it, making in-game adjustments on the fly. I feel better about it if Belichick's involved in it, if Belichick's going to take on sort of an Andy Reid, you know, Sean Payton when he was in New Orleans.
And just oversee the whole thing.
Sean McVay, just sort of like, if he's basically going to be the primary play caller, then I feel better about it. And then I'd say maybe sort of the third angle I look at with this is, this goes back to the Tom Brady theory that if your quarterback's really good, it doesn't really matter if your coaches are morons. Like, your quarterback will make them look better than they really are. I don't know if Mac's to that level yet, but based on the way people feel about Mac in the organization and outside the organization, it's possible he reaches that level. So it might not really matter if Matt Patricia is not qualified for the offensive coordinator job if Mac Jones takes this leap.
I'll tell you what, though. You're putting a ton of faith in a second-year quarterback if that's kind of the approach that you're taking, right? I mean, again, you get a nice rookie year. But if you're entering year two banking on him being the main reason that you're going to take that giant next step, I just think that's putting so much on a second-year quarterback's shoulders.
It is, but I think that they really believe in him. They like him. He's a good fit for the system. And remember, this is a coaching staff and an organization that, you know, told Ian O'Connor, you know, we think that Robert Kraft overrates Tom Brady. Tom Brady's not as special as maybe Robert Kraft thinks. We can win with any of the top 15 quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Mac Jones is already one of the top 15 quarterbacks in the league, I think, in my view. And I mean, I think, he's 14 or 15. But, you know, what if he takes a leap into the top 10 this year, which is, you know, certainly feasible. I mean, Mac Jones has proven me wrong. He's outlived, you know, what my expectations sort of were for him at this point. And I think his ceiling is higher than I initially pegged it at. So I understand the excitement here. And really, again, you know, the way they built the teams in the past and what the blueprint is, they do put a lot on the quarterback to cover up areas of the team where they haven't invested enough. And we'll see if Mac Jones is able to do that.
All right, 617-779-0985 is the telephone number. Going to start Patriots here. Also a lot to get to, Chris, when it comes to the Boston Red Sox. Yeah. Another loss last night. Are they actually going to be sellers? Feels like J.D. Martinez could be out the door really any minute here. And then also an interesting article from Alex Speer that I want to get into you with as well in terms of if the Red Sox are sellers, what's kind of the confidence level in Chaim Bloom to actually get a return here that you feel good about as well? Because I think this trade deadline is going to be a defining moment here for Chaim Bloom. And also the latest on the Kevin Durant situation as well. Zach Lowe over at ESPN coming out with an in-depth article, yeah, to say the least. It took me about 6 hours this morning to get through it, but we did manage to get through that article.
And you have to get to the end to know
it's unbelievable
what his stance is.
Oh my God!
You really do. And I'll be honest with you. It was kind of like the Brian Windhorst version of an article where he has you on edge the whole time, and you're like, wait, where's this going? And then you get to the end, and you're like, oh, I see.
So we'll get into that, too. I want to get your thoughts on the latest there. Obviously, Jaylen Brown apparently on the table in trade talks. I want to see what your feelings are on that as well. A lot to get to, and obviously see you guys already lined up on the phone lines, your phone calls, and more from Patriots Training Camp coming up next year on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Live from Gillette Stadium, it's New England Patriots Training Camp 2022, presented by Safety Insurance. Also brought to you by United Construction and Win Waste Innovations on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, back here at 98.5 The Sports Hub. It is Gasper and Murray, Tim McCone in for Big Jim, and we are live at Patriots Training Camp. And this hour of training camp is brought to you by Win Waste Innovations. Chris, just saw a nice touchdown pass from Mac Jones to Jacoby Myers in the back of the end zone there, and then we saw Jonnu Smith just drop what would have been a touchdown.
Yeah, it was a tough catch. He was trying to make it one-handed. It was a great throw to give him a chance. You would like to see him make that play. I mean, for an impact tight end, the touchdown, wow, that's a terrible throw by Bailey Zappe. Wide open, Christian Wilkerson in the end zone there. The nice play, though, was Jacoby Myers with a slot fade where he beat Sean Wade when Terrence Mitchell was in the neighborhood as well. That was a really good play. You don't think of Jacoby Myers as a go-up-and-get-it guy, but he went up and got that one.
You know, we were talking off the air, too, kind of about the ceiling for Mac Jones.
Yeah.
I was on with Maz and Big Jim on Thursday.
Okay.
And we were talking about Lamar Jackson, and would you pay that guy? Would you give him that next big contract, or would you move on? Would you pay him top of the market money like you're going to have to if you want to bring him back? I said no, I would move on. They called me a spoiled millennial. That's totally fair because I'm used to 20 years of Tom Brady, right? There's a level of excellence that I've become accustomed to. I need to readjust my standards. That's fair. Here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Like, we talk about, all right, if you moved on from Tom Brady and then he goes on to win a Super Bowl that next year, obviously it sucks to see that happen. But if you found the next guy in Mac Jones, all right, whatever. I guess you can live with that moving forward. What does that mean, though? Like, for you, what would a successful career for Mac Jones look like if you said they did, in fact, find that guy? Like, what does that look like?
I mean, it probably looks like maybe Matt Ryan with one Super Bowl. That's probably, you know, what I would say it looks like. I mean, that's successful to me. You know, just off the air, I was talking, and I'm always nervous now to get into this Mac Jones ceiling discussion because, you know, people, you know, that has not really ended well for me. And whenever I try and add any nuance to it, when I was like, here's the thing.
That's not
gonna
happen.
I'm saying Jag Jones, but for me, a quarterback Jag is a scale of Andy Dalton to, like, Kirk Cousins, the guys that aren't, like, elite. Nobody understood that. They just think I'm saying that Mac Jones is, like, the quarterback version of, like, who was the guy who muffed the punt a few years ago in Denver for the Patriots?
Oh,
the wide receiver. I can't remember his name.
14.
Chris Harper.
Chris Harper.
There it
is. Yeah, they think I'm just saying that Mac Jones is like Chris Harper because nobody actually listens. But anyways, I'll get into this. I think ultimate ceiling, like they hit a home run, like a grand slam on Mac Jones, he could be Drew Brees. Which would be, I mean, that would be successful.
You nailed that, if that's
yeah,
the case.
You nailed the pick, if it turns out. I mean, he has some Drew Brees-like tendencies, the way he moves, how quickly the ball comes out, the accuracy. You know, Drew Brees had some ridiculous seasons with accuracy, which also were, you know, part of that was the scheme he was in. But again, I think part of it is also the scheme that they're putting Mac Jones in. So, you know, I could see that. If you're really, really lucky as the Patriots and a Patriot fan, I think he ends up being Drew Brees, and I think you do cartwheels over that.
All right, 617-779-0985, the telephone number. So you guys lined up. Let's get to some of those calls. Let's go talk to Frank in Boston. Frank, what's going on?
Yeah, hi. So, Chris, I'm having a chuckle over the notion that Bill Belichick fleeced the Dolphins. You keep using the word fleeced.
Yeah.
For the Devontae Parker deal. I'm a Dolphins fan. I know quite a bit about Devontae Parker, and I'm having a chuckle over this, just like I am over Devon Godchow, who's no good. So when you use the word fleece, that implies the Dolphins traded him to the Patriots for less than they could have got him, than they could have dealt him to someone else, which is...
Well, not in my mind, but that's what... I mean, fleece is... I feel like it's... No, that's your definition of fleece. My definition of fleece would be you didn't get proper value for the player. It doesn't matter what, you know, what the other team
Chris,
is.
Proper value is the most anyone would give up for him. And by definition, the Patriots gave the Dolphins more than any other team in the NFL would. In fact, maybe a different way to think about it was the Patriots were so desperate for help at the receiver position that they overpaid for a receiver.
You could be right about that.
Cut
you could be right about that. I mean, another way to think about it would be the Dolphins asked for, you know, more, right? Because it's in the division. But what's the overall point? We disagree. You don't think Devontae Parker...
Frank's gone.
Oh, he's gone.
Yeah.
He doesn't think he'll make an impact. And I get that. I just think, again, if you're the Dolphins, why are you helping a division rival?
Right.
Like, I don't know. I mean, and I get it. Look, Belichick traded Drew Bledsoe to the Bills because he didn't think he was any good, and he was right. So maybe they don't think, oh, that's a pick six and a bad one. But Mac Jones just threw a pick six to Kyle Duggar.
Was it Duggar? Yeah.
Yeah, that's Kyle Duggar. So I don't know. I look at that deal. I just think if Devontae, let me ask you this. If Devontae Parker ends up being the number one receiver for the Patriots, and he did have a 1,000-yard season for the Dolphins in a similar offense, because remember now that the offensive coordinator that year was
Chad O'Shea.
Chad O'Shea in Miami. If he ends up being their number one receiver and has 1,000 yards, and the Patriots finish ahead of the Dolphins in the division, is that not a bad trade by the Dolphins and Chris Greer?
Yeah, it 100% is. And if he winds up being your number one receiver and 1,000-yard receiver as well, I would consider that trade a fleece first of the based on the value that you gave up for that type of player. When it comes to the offense, so far in camp, the storyline has kind of been that the secondary is owned offensively, some of these weapons for the Patriots. It's not exactly like the Pats are going up against the steel curtain here, and I know we're early on in camp, but do you have any concern here that a secondary with a lot of question marks in and of itself is having this kind of success early on?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I think it's good for the secondary, obviously. You know, some of these guys showing out, they're really deep at safety. I like some of the young corners. There is some concern there, basically, because the reason I'm concerned is that when I watch these drills, and I watched them before, and I just watched the way Belichick's acting, and the other day where the defense stops the offense, you know, 10 straight times, and the 11th time they get it, and it's the defense doing the push-ups, he's clearly stacking the deck towards the offense. And I thought that was sort of what Malcolm Butler was getting at when he said the other day, you know, Bill's an offensive coach now, he's not with us. These drills, these setups, these scenarios are stacked for the offense to have success, so when they don't, it's disappointing.
Yeah, it just feels like they're kind of trying to elevate and add some confidence here to this group, which is kind of what you saw during that win streak last year during the regular season. It felt like, too, when they started to pile on as well. When it comes to the offense and defense, I think one of the, again, spoiled millennial here, I'm used to like 12-win seasons being somewhat disappointing for the Patriots and getting knocked out in the AFC
like
championship
2019?
Game. Yeah, exactly. Like that was
a disaster.
A disaster. I couldn't sleep for 2 weeks after the 2019 season.
Oh, God.
No, but what do you have more questions about coming into this year? Is the offense or the defense? Because both groups have major questions.
Oh, that's a really good question. You know, I hadn't really thought of it in those terms. Losing J.C. Jackson, the way the defense got beat up by Buffalo, your division rival in those two games. I guess I'll say the defense. But on the other hand, I look at the offense, and I feel like it will be better. But my question is, can you win some of these shootout games? They almost did it against the Cowboys, right? They came really, really close. But the stat remains, and I'm going to pound it into the ground a million times, they didn't win any games last year where the opposing team scored 25 or more points.
I heard the guys reference that stat that you brought up for the first time this week. I can't believe that.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me that that's the situation
well,
right
that, just,
now.
But think about the think back to some of those games, though, the ones that they were winning during the winning streak. You know, they were jumping on top early. They were clearly a team built, particularly offensively, to play from ahead. And when they had to play from behind and put the pressure on Mac Jones with the weapons that he had, it was harder. You know, some of those games they got back into, obviously the Cowboys game, and even, you know, the Miami game at the end there, they sort of got back into it. But a lot of the times, once they got behind, even if they got back into the game, Indy was another game they got back into, they weren't able to pull it out in the end.
All right, 617-779-0985. Let's go talk to Paulie in the truck. Paulie, what's going on?
Hey, what's happening, boys?
Hey, Paulie.
Hey, good to speak with you. Gasper.
Yes.
You know why? I didn't know, but I found out a couple of weeks ago, I'm sure you've been informed, that one of my cousins on my father's side of the family is married to your wife's best friend.
Oh, really? No, I haven't
That's
been
right.
informed of this.
Billy,
oh.
You have Billy Carey.
I mean, oh,
Billy,
wow.
Billy Murray. Billy Murray, yeah. Gasper, I told him, I said, you got, I told her, I sort of told him, I said, you got to get Gasper a message. Tell him I said hi and tell him if he was a judge, Gasper was a judge, you know, he'd be the first liberal hanging judge in the history of the courts.
Yeah.
I love you, buddy.
All right. What do you got, Paulie?
Great article on Brady. On the San Fran thing that never happened, because of that damn owner Glazer a few months ago. I sent you a message at the Globe. I don't know if you got it or not. That was a fantastic article in the Globe, Gasper. I always look forward to reading your stuff.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.
You're the new show. You're Shaughnessy Jr. in my book.
Is that good or bad?
With those $10 words, will you?
Yeah.
Anyway, What I'm looking for, I'll tell you, if this team doesn't, they need Trey Flowers. They're going to move somebody. It's probably going to be Aguilar. But I'd like to see him move to the slot because I think he'll outrun your third and fourth corners. We'll be covering him. He'll have plenty of time to move. He gets jammed at the line easily when he's lined up out wide, but he can move either way. I think he'll be a real terror because he'll go over the middle for you. He was purported to do that. Reported to be willing to do that as a receiver, go over the middle. So I think you could kick him into the slot, but I need Trey Flowers more. We really need to stabilize that line, that defensive line, to help that linebacker core. If you bring him in, you balance out of that line out nicely. But if this team doesn't come off the schneid, if they continue to struggle like they did at the end of the year into the playoffs, by Thanksgiving, I'm moving Belichick out, and I'm moving Ooh. Mayo in, and uh-huh. by next year, I got Brian Flores back as defensive coordinator. I'm taking him from Pittsburgh, but see, they'll be able to take him right away, because he'll be getting a promotion. Bring him back in to run the defense, and I'm begging Tom Brady to come back on a 3-year guaranteed contract.
Love that, Paulie.
Wow, Paulie.
Nice little 4-point plan to become a Super Bowl contender
yeah,
again. I
wow.
like that move.
A lot to unpack there. I will say just a couple of things. I mean, with Aguilar, it is interesting. He played in the slot in Philly. You know, he was really good outside the year with the Raiders. I think he was second in the league in yards per pass reception at 18.3. But that's kind of part of the problem for the Patriots, right? They have a bunch of slot receivers. It's Myers, a slot guy, Bourne, Aguilar, Trey Nixon. You know, who's going to win on the outside? That's where Devontae Parker comes in. Also, I just have to say quickly, I just feel like the idea of firing Belichick is just preposterous.
I'm with you, too. I'm with you on that as well. I don't know if this thing's trending in the right direction or not. We're going to find out a lot in the second year of Mac Jones. But, yeah, to move on from him right now is pretty aggressive, no question. All right, 617-779-0985. Looks like the Pats are starting to wrap stuff up here at Gillette. We'll get back to your phone calls here on the other side. It is Gasper and Amari Timicone in for Big Jim.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Live at Gillette Stadium for Training Camp 2022, presented by Safety Insurance on Boston's home for New England Patriots football, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, back here, 98.5 The Sports Hub. It is Gasper Murray, Tim McCone in for Big Jim, and we are live at Patriots Training Camp. This hour of training camp is brought to you by Win Waste Innovations, and Chris should be joined here shortly by Patriots running back Ramondre Stevenson. And you want to talk about another guy that's going to have a lot on his shoulders this year, it feels like offensively, it's going to be Stevenson.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he averaged 4.6 yards per carry last year. That was exactly the same as Damien Harris. They were a lethal 1-2 punch for the Patriots. When you looked at it overall, the guys combined for more than 1,500 yards rushing, 1,535, and 20 rushing touchdowns. So that's an area of strength for the team. It was last year, their ability to run the football. It should be again this year. But I think you're looking for Stevenson to take a step forward as a pass catcher, be a guy who can be a threat out of the backfield. That's something he did in college at Oklahoma. But last year, you know, Harris actually had more receptions than he did. Harris had 18, Stevenson had 14. And with James White and where he's at, sort of uncertain, you know, moving forward, he's on PUP, he's coming back from that hip injury. But Stevenson's a guy I think you look to as a sub back.
Well, you just kind of look at the draft from last year too, Chris, and we're kind of talking about this reboot, and obviously Mac Jones is a big part of that coming into year two, but feels like you crushed that draft.
Whether it's, doesn't it?
You know, Mac Jones, Stevenson, obviously Barmore on the defensive side too. And you go back and you kind of look at 2019, and one of the reasons you don't feel good about it is, you know, coming in this offseason, you're saying, oh, man, I would love if they had a number one wide receiver. I wish they had some help at corner. I wish they had another linebacker or an edge rusher. And you look at that 2019 draft, and it was N'Keal Harry. Safe to say it's probably not going to work out for him in Chicago based on the early returns there.
He was really excited to be there. And then the stuff you're reading over there, it sounds like he might not be long for the Windy City.
And then obviously Juwan Williams still on the roster, but you know, you haven't gotten a lot out of him. And then Chase Winovich gone as well. So if you are really going to reboot this thing, it's going to be through the draft, and it's going to be because of players like Stevenson moving forward. So hopefully we talk with him in just a couple minutes. In the meantime, let's sneak in a couple calls here. Let's talk to Jonathan and Randolph. Jonathan, what's up?
Hey, guys. Chris, this is more of a question for you because you know the whole league. No offense, McCone. But
awesome. Thanks. Appreciate that, man.
I'm a worrywart, so I'm pretty concerned right now with the O-line. By the metrics on, like, Pro Football Focus and other measurables, he doesn't seem to be really considered elite per se. But with Jensen going down, how big of a hole does that leave on the Bucs line? And do you think Robert Hainsey with a full camp as a starter can be a good replacement so to protect Brady?
Yeah.
I'll hang up and answer your, hear what you have to say.
I mean, I think that's a big loss for them. You know, obviously they made the deal for Shaq Mason, but you're looking at the interior of their offensive line. Alex Kappa's gone. Ryan Jensen's going to be out for a while. Ali Marpet retired. If you're looking at it from the Tom Brady standpoint, we all know it here, right, in New England. How do you bother Tom Brady? You pressure him up the middle. I think Ryan Jensen is a huge loss for the Bucs. As much as I hate watching him play at times, Jim Murray and I have nicknamed him O'Doyle. Remember from O'Doyle Rules?
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. O'Doyle Rules from Billy Madison. So it's like, you know, he always seems to be doing something that he shouldn't be doing, bullying people, getting penalties. But it is a big drop off to Robert Hainsey. I would not be surprised if Tampa went out and got a veteran center just to buttress that position, whether it's J.C. Tretter, who's still out there, or Matt Paradis, who used to be the center for Peyton Manning. So Brady would be able to sort of check in on him a little bit with Peyton Manning and also played in that division the last couple of years with Carolina.
What do you make of the Patriots offensive line? Obviously, the big story so far with the Pats offensive line is it feels like maybe Trent Brown's going to be your left tackle this year and they're going to move Isaiah Wynn over to right tackle.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. You know, it wasn't all that long ago. In fact, it was 2019, right, that they invested about $24 million in guards between franchising Joe Tooney and the Shaq Mason contract. And now you look at it, and the guards are going to be a rookie in Cole Strange and Michael Onwenu, who's been able to play guard and some tackle. So you hope that that works out long term. Trent Brown was good in his first stint as a Patriot at left tackle, but it is a little bit damning when you look at Isaiah Wynn, a guy you used a first-round pick on, that they feel like now they're going to move him to right tackle. In an ideal world, you feel like he holds down that position, and that's a guy who on that fifth-year option is making some he's making some money. I mean, he's making north of $10 million. So when you look at that overall, you expect this offensive line to be good. You'd expect it to have maybe fewer question marks than it does when you look at both the draft capital and some of the financial capital that's invested in it.
And obviously that offensive line going to be blocking for guys like Ramondre Stevenson joining us now. And Ramondre, entering year two here, we've heard Bill Belichick talk in the past about how players make that big leap from year one to year two. Do you kind of feel like you have your feet underneath you heading into this second year?
Yeah, definitely. I feel a lot more confident going into this season. I feel like my teammates trust me more and they're depending on me to do, big things this year.
You know, one of the areas, Ramondre, that maybe you'll have a growth opportunity this year is in the passing game. I know that's something you were involved in at Oklahoma last year as a rookie, 14 receptions. How big a part of that game do you think it can be? And what's the opportunity there for you to learn that role with James Whiteout?
Yeah, it's a huge opportunity for not just me, but all the backs to get in there and run routes on third down, even first and second down. So just honing down on, pass pro and running routes.
Sticking with the passing game, obviously Mac Jones, a guy that you came in with entering his second year as well. How do you feel like his transition's going so far as he enters his second year?
I feel like it's going great. He's working hard, very hard, and he's learning a lot. I think it should be a good year for him.
Ramondre, you mentioned running routes. This is a complicated offense, at least it has been in the past, and you were a rookie last year. It can be difficult for rookies, obviously, to pick it up. Just with some of the changes that we've heard about that guys have mentioned, Kendrick Bourne and Trent Brown both mentioned that the offense is streamlined a little bit and you guys can play faster. Does that make it a little bit more palatable? You know, is it a little bit easier to digest this offense and play faster in the passing game?
I would say so. I mean, it's the NFL, so nothing's going to be easy. So it's still a learning, little learning experience. But yeah, it's a little bit easier, I would say. Play faster.
What? Just out of curiosity, I mean, what makes it easier? Is maybe the menu of options in terms of route adjustments, site adjustments? Has that been simplified a little bit? You know, what makes it maybe a little bit easier to digest than it was last year?
Yeah, I would say that just simpler terminology. I would say honestly.
Obviously, Josh and Ivan both leaving after last season. So what's that transition been like for you in year two?
Vinny was here last year. That's the running back coach, and he's doing a great job. I feel like he's doing a great job coaching us up. And, it's just coaches leave, coaches go. So it just is what it is. We just got to adjust.
Ramondre, what are you looking to work on in terms of the running game last year? You had a really successful rookie season and 600 yards, 4.6 yards per carry. Is there anything that when you went back and watched the film, you said, okay, if I can do this better as a runner in year two, whether it's vision or picking holes or breaking tackles, what are you looking to work on as a runner?
Just knowing the whole scheme, just knowing exactly where my O-line is going, who they're going up to the second level, who they're blocking, just knowing where the holes are going to be.
In your mind, now that you have a year under your belt, what's the biggest difference between running the ball in college and running the ball in the NFL and trying to get some of those big plays?
I feel like in the NFL, you got to see the hole and you got to hit it very fast. The holes close up, like I said, very fast. So it's just a faster game.
Yeah, that's interesting, in terms of it being a faster game, too. Is one of the things maybe you're hoping for this year, because I know I watched you in college and you were definitely a big play back. Your long run last year was 21 yards. What do you think you have to do to maybe, break off some of those longer runs, the 40-yard runs, the 50-yard runs that you broke off all the time in college?
I think I just got to make better decisions in the second level, make the right cuts, and, open up.
We saw, too, some reports earlier this week that you got a little leaner in the offseason as well. Is that one of the things that you focused on to try to come together with some of those more explosive plays in this season?
Yeah, exactly. I got my weight down a little bit, changed my nutrition, and hopefully that could, account for bigger plays.
What's it like, Ramondre, having, Coach Belichick more involved on the offensive side. I mean, obviously a legendary coach. He can coach any position on the field. He can coach any unit. But just, you know, I'm sure he's a guy that you grew up watching the NFL, seeing on the sideline. What's it like having him more involved with the offense?
I mean, you said it best. He could coach any position on the field, and just getting coached by him is honestly a blessing. I just take everything in and try to soak everything he says in.
All right, Ramondre, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
All right, appreciate it.
Have a great season, Ramondre. Yeah,
thank you.
All right, he's Ramondre Stevenson, running back for the New England Patriots, taking some time after practice here to meet with us. And again, I mean, when you talk about this offense kind of taking that next step, I would imagine that he's going to have to be a big part of it if they are, in fact, going to do it. When you look at the not necessarily the question marks at running back, you feel like that's probably one of their deepest positions. But with James White not back healthy and things like that, you hope that he can at least become a little bit more involved in the passing game.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's one of their guys who's dangerous in space. And that's basically what NFL offense comes down to these days. You know, the line is blurring a little bit between running backs and wide receivers. You see what San Francisco did with Deebo Samuel. If you're just looking at it overall to simplify what offense is today in the NFL, it's getting the ball to your playmakers in space. And if you can do that with Ramondre Stevenson a little bit more in the passing game, he's a dangerous, dangerous player. And the other issue, I think, or not issue, but just sort of conversation piece, is that Damien Harris is going to the last year of his contract.
That's a great point.
And Ramondre Stevenson might end up being the number one back on this team in the future. It's a little bit easier to let Damien Harris go, or to not have to pony up for that contract, or to feel like you have some leverage contract-wise. And they used a pick on Pierre Strong here, so they drafted another running back. So if you have to move on from Damien Harris, who had a 929-yard season and was really, I would say, one of the top 10 backs in the league last year, you want to feel comfortable doing that. You have to have Ramondre Stevenson, I think, elevate himself a little bit. And everything we've seen from him so far, it looks like he could be a number one running back on this team if that's ultimately what they ask him to do.
All right, things wrapping up here at Gillette Stadium for day four of training camp. Chris, we are going to talk some more Patriots coming up, but can you humor me with some Kevin Durant stuff here coming up
sure.
in the next segment? I want to get to a Zach Lowe article that dropped this morning on ESPN, kind of breaking down the Celtics and Nets situation when it comes to a potential deal. We'll do that on the other side. It's Gasper and Murray, Tim McCone.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
No one gets you into training camp like we do. Live from Gillette Stadium, it's New England Patriots Training Camp 2022. Presented by Safety Insurance on Boston's home for New England Patriots football. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
All right, back here, 98.5 The Sports Hub. Tim McCone, Chris Gasper here with you, taking you up until 2 o'clock. And Chris spent the first 45 minutes or so talking Patriots, but I wanted to dip into some of the big NBA news this week that broke. And obviously, I think it was Monday that we first started to get the reports that the Celtics had, in fact, offered up Jaylen Brown in a trade package for the Brooklyn Nets. Obviously, Brooklyn at the time doesn't think that it's enough. And we got an article from Zach Lowe this morning kind of breaking down the situation when it comes to Durant and Jaylen Brown. And obviously, you know, we spent a lot of time talking about just, you know, what a package would look like for Durant if the Celtics wanted to make this move. I think we all assumed that it was going to be Jaylen Brown, and it is, in fact, kind of the centerpiece for this deal. So, I mean, I guess my first question to you before we kind of break down this Zach Lowe stuff is, if you were Brad Stevens,
yeah,
and you had the opportunity to bring in Kevin Durant for a guy like Jaylen Brown, are you doing that?
No. No, I'm not doing it. I've been pretty, you know, clear on this. I understand why they're involved in it, but Kevin Durant's a great player. He's a better player than Jaylen Brown.
Yep.
That's indisputable. But I do think that Kevin Durant is kind of like a really, really fast sports car. You can only drive him to peak efficiency with peak conditions. And what I mean by that is if you look at his career in terms of being able to win when he's won at a high level, he's been on stacked teams. Even that 2012 OKC team, it was him, it was Westbrook, it was James Harden,
yep.
who wasn't quite James Harden yet, but that was in large part because he wasn't getting the touches.
Yeah, the role, exactly.
Yeah, because of Durant and Westbrook. Ibaka was on that team. That was a really good team. Mm-hmm. You look at the titles he won in Golden State, he's already going to a championship team. He's sort of, you know, the cherry on the sundae. And you look at what he tried to build in Brooklyn when it was obviously himself, Harden, Kyrie. He wants stacked teams. If you swap him out essentially for Jaylen Brown, is that a stacked team? Like, it's Tatum, it's Durant. I'm a huge Malcolm Brogdon guy. But just in KD's mind, is that a stacked team?
Right. So Zach Lowe kind of lays it out, and it's the first time I've really kind of looked at the lineups if Durant was going to be on that roster. And so your starting five would probably be Brogdon, Tatum, Durant, Al Horford, and Robert Williams. And then your bench would ultimately be probably Derek White, Grant Williams, Peyton Pritchard, and Gallinari there.
I mean, I like that team.
It's a good team.
I mean, I do like that team. I ultimately, what it comes down to for me is that, and there's so many there's so many different aspects to this. Look, if Jaylen Brown's a flight risk, then you got to make the deal. But assuming that you can re-sign him, there's so many different aspects to this. One, to me, is I just feel like the championship needle doesn't get moved as much as you would think by Kevin Durant. He's obviously a huge name, but look at the history of his career. It says that he needs a little more than that to win a championship. Also, he's going to be 34 in September. So how long is your championship window? I think it's 3 years. I think he can play at the level he's playing at now. And as Zach Lowe pointed out in this article, he's played, 90 games the last 3 years?
Yeah, that certainly gives you pause.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's not exactly the number that you're looking for. Now, obviously, one of that is the coming off of the Achilles. So it's a lost year, but you're right. I mean, he lost a significant amount of time last year. I would push back on it a little bit just because you're talking about a guy that, and we spent so much time talking about Jason Tatum being first-team All-NBA. Jason Tatum's not first-team All-NBA if Durant doesn't miss time last year. Like, Kevin Durant is the first-team All-NBA player last year if he stays healthy throughout that time. And he's a guy that still averages 30 points a game. I'm with you, by the way. Older guy, 33, going to be 34 in just a few months. And so, yeah, your championship window is probably 2 to 3 years if he stays happy and engaged.
Happy and healthy. And those are two big question marks. I mean, that's the thing. People are like, oh, he has a 4-year deal. It's like, okay, well, what's he going to be like at age 37? One. And two, is he going to be happy the entire 4 years? Like, if he comes here, figures out this is not a stacked team, that you moved most of your assets to get him and that you really can't add much, you know, moving forward. And maybe there's a way you can in free agency. I don't know. But if he figures that out, is he going to say, well, I want to move on to the next team?
It's fair, and there's definitely some risk behind it. I make this deal 10 times out of 10. I really do. I don't think twice about it. I move on from Jaylen Brown. I don't care if he wants to sign an extension or not. Like, that, to me, doesn't play a factor at all. I just think if you have the opportunity to bring in a guy like a Kevin Durant, who is a top three player in the last, 15 years, you'd say, in the league, I think you have to go out and do that, and I do think it elevates your chances to win a championship. You know, Zach Lowe kind of laid it out as well, and you can look at kind of where the Celtics are in two different ways, and I guess you kind of fall in either one of two camps, right? And the first one is, this is a team that went to the finals last year, and it was two wins away from winning a championship. You've got a young core. Why would you break that up? Fair point. Or you can fall in the camp that I kind of I put myself in, which is, all right, you beat the defending champs, the Bucks, that didn't have their second-best player in Chris Middleton.
Who kills you whenever he plays you.
And you almost got bounced by them. You had to win Game 6. You had to have an all-world performance from Jason Tatum in that Game 6. Then you come back and win a Game 7. And then you beat a Miami team that, again, was a Jimmy Butler 3 away from beating you. Not only that, didn't have a healthy Tyler Hero. Had a banged-up Jimmy Butler for some of that series.
And Kyle Lowry wasn't 100%. Yeah.
And if, you know, let's say Durant goes somewhere else, too, that kind of factors in as well. And I just think, you deserve to be there last year in the finals. No question about it. You had a tough path, no doubt. But I don't think it's a given that you're going back there, even with a guy like Brogdon and a guy like Gallinari coming off the bench for you. I don't necessarily think you can pencil them in as the favorite. I think if you acquire Kevin Durant, you're instantly the favorite to come out of the East and probably the favorite to win the championship in the NBA. And maybe it is a 2 to 3 year window, but doesn't it feel like that's what your window is in the NBA regardless?
Yeah, and that was one of the points Zach Lowe sort of made, that these windows can look like they're wider and then all of a sudden they close, and that the Patriots, the Celtics look like they had maybe a wider window coming off the 2018 Eastern Conference Finals performance, you know, without Gordon Hayward and Kyrie Irving, and that next year everybody was hailing them as Warriors East, and, you know, they're going to be the team in the East now that LeBron's gone and all this other stuff, and very quickly that dissipated. Let me throw this at you, though, and this is an interesting thing in my mind. If you're asking one player, and the guy's completely healthy, to be the alpha dog on your team and lead you to a title, who would you rather have that guy be, Kawhi Leonard or Kevin Durant?
Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Jaylen Brown can grow into Kawhi Leonard. And I think Ime Udoka thinks Jaylen Brown can grow into Kawhi Leonard. Now, Kawhi Leonard's not as good a player as Kevin Durant. He's not.
No, he's not.
But he has sort of an internal compete thing. And look, Durant has a high compete level. I'm not saying he's not competitive. But there's something with Kawhi where he's just like a stone-cold killer, and he can, like, put a team on his back to a championship. He did that in Toronto. We saw it. Have you really seen Durant do that with a non-stacked team?
No, you haven't, right? Like, and so you're right about that. Like, when you look at Kawhi Leonard, he might not talk to you for you know, to a month at a time. He might not let you know what the deal is when it comes to his injuries and whether or not he's going to play. But if he's on the court, yeah, he can absolutely lead you to a championship. Don't forget, too, I mean, there was that last Spurs season when he was actually healthy, when he goes down with the ankle injury in the postseason.
Oh, against Golden State.
They might have knocked off Golden State in that series, too, if he doesn't go down with that ankle injury. So, yeah, you've seen it with Kawhi Leonard. You're right. I probably would take Kawhi Leonard over Kevin Durant. But again, just from – here's my thing. Like, if you think Tatum is truly the player that I feel like a lot of us believe he is, if you pair him with a Durant, I think, you know, not only are you taking some of the weight off of Durant's shoulders in terms of having to be the face of the franchise, but also it helps a guy that's going to be 34 moving forward as well. And, man, I just go back to the offense in the postseason.
Yeah.
I get it. Jaylen Brown, you know, put up some points, no question about it. Also couldn't dribble for half the postseason. And your offense was anemic at times, especially during that Golden State run. And how about the last couple games against Miami down the stretch, too, when they start blitzing Tatum and you don't really have an answer for it, and you're watching Marcus Smart just jack up three after three. I mean, that looks completely different if it's Kevin Durant and Jason Tatum
out there
instead of the Jaylen Brown situation.
I'm just a little worried that, first of all, I'm like a Jaylen Brown stan, but also I'll say that I'm just a little worried that Durant and Tatum might be too similar. They were very good, obviously, on that Olympic team, but they're too similar from a demeanor standpoint.
No doubt. I think it's a good point.
And that you would have two sort of you'd have a passive leader in Tatum and a passive aggressive leader in Durant.
Perfect way to put it. Yeah.
The king of the burner account.
Yes.
You know?
Yep. No question. I mean, that's, you're going to have to monitor Instagram and Twitter pretty heavily if he does, in fact, go to Boston.
Look who's gracing us with his presence here.
I know. We got Phil Perry standing by. He's going to join us and kind of give us a recap of what have been the first few days here at Patriots training camp. So this is what we'll do. We'll step aside here quickly, get you caught up on Hub headlines that I will write off the top of my head because I totally forgot that I had to do Hub headlines until about 10 seconds ago. So we'll fire those up for you, and we'll be back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.